Hello and welcome to On and Off the Pitch. I hope you're well. I'm well. I'm drier. I'm inside after a weekend which saw torrential rain. I felt sorry for the ball boys out there and the fixtures that took place in the Barclays Women's Championship and the Premier League, etc., etc. It was interesting, no doubt, especially for you traveled in that, because boy, was it wet. It was wet. In the Barclays Women's Championship, we saw a few fixtures take place on Sunday. It was a midday kickoff and a 2 o'clock kickoff. Midday was Crystal Palace versus Sheffield United. The 2 o'clock kickoff was Charlton Reading. A whole host of teams didn't kick off at all. They were resting, watching the proceedings from afar, or behind a cushion, biting the edges and the nails. There was also a Monday night kickoff. Why? Blackburn Rovers versus Lewis kicked off at 7 p.m. on a Monday. Why? Let's start with the Mother's Day kickoff, as I called it, midday, Sellers Park. Two teams duking it out: Crystal Palace and Sheffield United Women. Boom. Both teams needed a win for different reasons, very different reasons. Crystal Palace, they have it in their hands. They have it in their hands in terms of whether they are going to be promoted or not. They need to win all of their games, all of them. They have the goal difference, it's in their favour. And Sheffield United, they have had a mixed bag in terms of this season, considering they're a team in transition. Many of their established players have moved on, and they're bringing through a whole host of new players. But yeah, for different reasons, they needed 3 points. So in the first half, in a rather wet Selhurst Park, right? There's a question that I have. This is in not relation to the game. A question that I have: teams are still doing like taking the knee before kickoff. And there was a lot of controversy. There's a lot of conversation about football players doing that, not bringing politics into sport, etc., so on and so forth. However, I do wonder if players do that and think about what that means beyond the game itself on a wider landscape, considering the death toll that has taken place in Palestine. I just wonder. I just wonder. Who are they taking the knee for? And what do they look like? Anyway, back to the game. Okay, so this was an easy game to call, in my opinion, from the sidelines. From the outset, I predicted a Palace win. I just thought the form was in their side. They had the players, they had the goals, the goal difference, their players that could unlock a defence. And that's what I predicted. And the conditions on the day, wet, rainy, were not conducive, I thought, to slick and precise football. And this was definitely not the game to continually use the back pass. Okay. So, yeah, after a touchy start from both teams, and I say touchy because, trying to find your footing on a pitch that you're not familiar with and you're not comfortable with necessarily because you don't always play your games on it, and we'll get to that in a bit. Sheffield United actually did take control, from the very beginning. They seem to have a really good passing game. They're very comfortable moving the ball between the lines, across the lines, back to their back four, into midfield. They had willing runners up front. It was really good to see from them, and they really kind of pressed Crystal Palace back in the first half, especially the first 30 minutes or so. And I felt that, Sheffield United were very comfortable in their passing and their possession. They posed, I would say, definitely a threat to the Palace defensive line. For Sheffield United in terms of personnel, Goodwin had a good couple of chances, opportunities to get on the score sheet, but didn't take the opportunities when they arose. There was a couple of times when we saw the through ball through to the strikers going forward. They were overhit, and the ball would pick up pace because of the wet surface and the heavy, heavy, heavy rain. So there is that. In terms of Crystal Palace going forward, their key players were visible, but I would say one key player for them, Atkinson, was I wouldn't necessarily say that she had her best first half. I think she was frustrated at times. The ball wasn't coming to her. There was a good tussle between her and the Sheffield United right back. Axon was able to demonstrate her speed and crossing on the run at one opportunity, but the Sheffield keeper, Stenson, would come out and comfortably collect the ball with ease. So, going forward, I would say for both teams, it was in percentage wise, I'd say probably 60-40 in favour of Sheffield United in the first half. They did have more of it. And Crystal Palace, although the home team, I would say that they were playing on as a counter-attack. They didn't have an established a routine or pattern of play or stability to build up from the back as they had previously, which is something. And again, with Goodwin's pace, she would stride away from Gibbons in defence, and her cross would only find more Palace players because the Sheffield United players just didn't have the legs to get up to that part of the pitch and support the attack. So there were, great attempts on goals from both teams. In particular, Hughes and Sharp for Palace, one of which would smash against the crossbar and fly away. Was a fantastic strike. I'm sure, I think it was Sharp from an angle. No one was expecting the shot, definitely not the keeper. And the keeper, a couple of inches or an inch or so below the crossbar, and the keeper would just have been a spectator like those in the stands. And it was definitely a strike on goal, which drew the ooh from the crowd, which and they could appreciate the effort as well as the playing staff, the management team on the sideline. In both boxes, penalty areas, there would be a variety of moments where confusion ruled. In the rain, can't get the ball away, but also overplaying and inviting pressure. Now, on a dry day, I know that most teams will want to play it from the back, and Sheffield United did that consistently throughout the game. They really did. They have a way of playing. They'll stick to it regardless of the weather conditions, and they did that. But there were moments where the touch too much over, dwelling on the ball when they should have moved it on quickly was inviting pressure, inviting the opportunity for the opposing team to nick in and create a chance. And that happened for both teams in the first half, primarily. In terms of the passing, and this is the one thing that stood out primarily in the first half, I would say, and periods within the second half. You could hear the crowds, individuals in the crowd would shout out their frustrations when they could see the pass on and the player not react to what they could see. Now, obviously, from the sidelines, you see the game at a very different angle. You have a better appreciation for space and awareness and players being available. But you can also note that when a player is uncomfortable with using their weaker foot to pass the ball 5 to 10 yards, and they do this kind of 180-degree arc, if that's possible, to get their body around into position so they can play a pass which they could have played with their left or their right across the ground or a little dink into area or space for their teammate to collect. So that was noticeable very much indeed. If I were to say that in terms of scoreline in attempts, I would say that Sheffield United would definitely have held the upper ground in the first half, but Crystal Palace, didn't falter in any way in terms of their application. They were trying to move the ball as effectively as they have done this season. Key moments, I would say that Sheffield United almost gifted Palace an opportunity. Goodwin again closing down the Palace keeper, and her interception almost proved costly. There was a great run and cross. Phenomenal, I think it's from Blanchard, and which resulted in a save from the Sheffield United keeper. A good opportunity. And I had the opportunity to sit and talk to one of the Palace backroom staff who deals with media, and we could talk about the players moving across the pitch and in terms of Crystal Palace specifically. Watching Blanchard's movement during the game is really good. A player that doesn't necessarily get the credit, I think, obviously doesn't score as many goals as I would like. That's just my opinion. Hughes, being the central striker for Crystal Palace, has done a fantastic job for them as a club going forward. But I think Blanchard is a very, very special player. And there were elements and moments within the game where you saw her movement, which was really simple, creating overloads in the wide areas, an indecision from the Sheffield United players as to whether or not to go to mark, and if they did, they would leave gaps in the middle, and then just great moments of awareness from Blanchard in moving players out of position and then picking the right pass to create opportunities down the flanks and across into the box. So it was good to see and have a conversation with someone about that as well. So it was nice. Again, Atkinson, I would say, again, frustration from Atkinson, picked up a yellow for kicking the ball away because the pass wasn't accurate to her, and failing to collect it as it ran out of play. But she would at one point pick the pocket of the Sheffield United player, and instant pass to Hughes, and the cross missed. The cross was missed by inches for the on rushing and sliding Blanchard, and everything is sliding. I mean, it was so bad. It was a moment. One of the Palace players actually removed their top to remove their base layer top, which was probably soaked and was probably feeling, they were probably feeling really uncomfortable and needed to just get rid of that. The rain was torrential. I felt for the players. I felt for the ball boys in that. It was tough. It was really tough. And as for the referee, let's just say that there were some calls that were odd, strange. Goal kicks when they should have been corners. Corners given when there should have been goal kicks, and the complaints were vocal, and you could not necessarily hear them, but you could see that the management team were upset from both sides. But for Crystal Palace, and so much so that the Crystal Palace head coach was given a Mother's Day card of her own from the referee in the shape of a yellow card. So you may complain, but you get something for it—a win-win. So in terms of the second half, more torrential rain. Loads of it. And I can only describe the second half in bullet points. Lots of sliding challenges, free kicks, and bookings. But there would be a breakthrough. There would be a breakthrough back to the game. There would be a breakthrough, and it would come in the shape of a ricocheted moment, bouncing around. Sheffield United unable to clear the ball. Molly Sharp's persistence and a hesitance from the keeper would see the ball ping pong through bodies and across the line. So jubilation for Crystal Palace in their moment, because this is probably a game that they definitely wanted to make sure that they had won, and they collected all 3 points. This is a game that's going to take place again. I mean, Crystal Palace and Sheffield United play each other again in the next round of games, so it'd be interesting to see how it turns out. But in terms of the way of the table, this was a very important fixture for Crystal Palace in terms of what they would like to achieve this season. They haven't been bragging or anything like that in terms of social media. They know that it's in their hands. They have the goal difference. If they win all their games, they will be promoted, more or less. Obviously, by saying that, there are teams like Birmingham and Charlton are going to have something to say about that. Sunderland definitely will have something to say about that. Southampton and all of the other teams, and even the teams at the bottom of the league who are fighting for their lives in terms of staying in this league, will have something to say. It's not a foregone conclusion, but if you were to go with the line that they win their games and everything falls in, favor for them in terms of things line up, in terms of teams lose where they possibly might not lose, but their path is clear, then it stands to reason that they will be victorious at the end. In terms of the game overall, it was a great game to watch in terms of the jeopardy of watching football in torrential rain and what can happen. There is something about watching footballers sliding across the ground and being unable to pass the ball in a really fluid way, which is always comical. You can cut you because you have to laugh sometimes. You just think, what the hell was happening there? In terms of the referee, I don't think the referee really did themselves and the refereeing team to either of the benches in terms of the decisions which were given. Free kicks were given, which were dubious. As I said, corners were given when it should have been goal kicks. Goal kicks were given when it should have been corners. So, overall, a mixed bag, but an enjoyable one to watch if you're a neutral on a really, really wet mothering Sunday. In terms of the crowd, the numbers were down because it was Mothering Sunday. And that's something to say. It was a rearranged fixture, difficult to get the numbers up at Selhurst Park. Now, Crystal Palace, they have the opportunity, as I've said, to go forward into the WSL or up into the WSL. And it's the club's decision as to where they play their fixtures. So it was really strange to know that the previous game was called off because it was played at their actual home ground, which is the Sutton United ground where they play. So they share that ground, so there's that. And that ground was deemed to be unfit to play. It had rained quite a few days before the fixture, and I think it had rained the night before the fixture. The referees called it off literally an hour before kickoff because it's unsafe, and they had a conversation with regards to whether they felt that there would be a risk to the players if they played in that fixture, knowing the importance of that game going forward, right? Because it is, it's Birmingham, right? They're in the fight to be promoted as well. They want to get to the WSL. It would be almost shambolic to actually play that fixture back at that ground when you know that you can get it scheduled at Selhurst Park. There must be a window in which you can play that game at Selhurst Park. And people said, what are you talking about? The Premier League? Whoa. Blackburn Lewis played on a Monday night at 7 p.m. So there is a way. There is a way. Level heads, conversation, look at the calendar, let's see what we can do. Both teams want to play the game. Both teams would love to play football on a football pitch which is flat, without divots, which is of a standard of the Premier League. Who doesn't want to play on a Premier League football pitch? Come on. Seriously. Everyone does. There are 7-year-old kids that want to play on a Premier League football pitch. These are professional footballers. Give them the opportunity to play at Selhurst Park. It makes sense. It could be the fixture that decides who goes up, who gets the silverware, who doesn't get the silverware. It's that important, and it's coming up very, very soon. So for the powers that be, whether it's in the club, whether it's in the league, make it happen. Selhurst Park makes sense for that fixture and its importance to be at the other ground. And I'll say their home ground. And the pitch is okay. And this, the stadium is fine. But just in case we move into April and we have April showers and the pitch is still not playable because it's been used by Sutton United and their fixtures and their take priority, then you have to think of the bigger picture, especially when you get fixture congestion further on down the line. There are only so many games left to play. So please, at some point, someone have common sense and make it happen. And in terms of the game against Sheffield United, Crystal Palace break the hoodoo and actually win at Selhurst Park. So why not play the fixtures there? Now they've got past it, they've won. Why would you say go away? You'd be like, we've got the field, we know what to do. We've got the rubber, the green. Let's do it. Let's do it. Now, so in terms of that game that was done and dusted, the later game which kicked off, Charlton Reading. Again, from the sidelines, 2 o'clock kickoff. So they will know exactly what's happened for the 12 o'clock kickoff. They will have seen the results before they kicked off, or definitely by halftime. I'm saying Charlton, definitely. They're going to win. It's Reading. Reading haven't had a great season. They're a mixed bag. Lo and behold, Charlton don't win at home. They don't win at home. They lose by 1-0. Reading score just before this the end of the first half. And despite all of the firepower that Charlton have to the at their disposal, I'm talking, they've got Addison, Green, Phyllis, they've got Johnson, Longhurst, couldn't get the job done. And I'm just calling those names out just because Oh, they're the stellar players. I'm not saying the other players aren't stellar, but you're thinking these guys can score goals. Didn't work for them, didn't happen for them. You know, there and thereabouts. It's going to be interesting that Charlton missed the trick to stay close to Crystal Palace as they move forward. It's not over. Things can happen. Things can still go in their favour. But when you have momentum like this and you want to maintain it, it's really, really important that when you have opportunities to take 3 points against any team that you think has had a middling to average season, such as Reading, considering their WSL experience, that you would want to win your home games. Really important. I'll talk about the league in a minute in terms of the table. So fantastic for Reading because they need it because they're at that point. You know, when people are looking over their shoulder, are we close to the drop zone? We need to move away from here now. Great for them. Not so great for Charlton. For the Monday night fixture, Blackburn Lewis. Again, why Monday? Why Monday at 7? Okay. Like these two teams don't do anything. Like, what was wrong with Sunday? Anyway, Blackburn do a fantastic job at home. Great goals. I said great goals. Great goals for them. Cohen and Shepherd scoring there too. And Alden scoring one for Lewis. A player I do like, actually. I was surprised that she moved away from Crystal Palace and joined Lewis. But there you go. Blackburn holding out. Holding out. Because I would say that Lewis had, you know, watched that game on the FA player. Lewis are really putting them under pressure. But in the sense of, like, for me, the best centre back in the Barclays Women's Championship was playing Jade Richards. I'm biased. I say it as it is. You know, top quality, marshalling the defence alongside Silcock, making sure that Blackburn Rovers get all 3 points. The manager going back to his old club, you know, taking the glory, Mr. Parker, who was once with Lewis many, many, many months ago. So this will be not so extra sweet, but he will definitely have enjoyed that in terms of Blackburn Rovers' position in the league and what that means for them going forward. Fantastic in terms of where they are. Sixth in the table, 22 points, you know, for them. Lewis in 11th place, 13 points. And I'm going to go from the bottom up. Right, in terms of the league table, and we're going to do it just after this. Cheers, Vicar. You need to get your tea in. So, in terms of the league table for the Barclays Women's Championship, bottom up, Watford. Watford. Whoa. Watford, the Watford Wolves with 12 plates and 12 points. Just above them with 13 points, Lewis. Just above them with 16 points is London City Lionesses. Just above them is Sheffield United with 17. And that much needed win, Reading with 18 points just above Sheffield United. So you could imagine where they were. They would have been in the bottom three without those 3 points, considering the other teams, such as London City Lionesses, hadn't played. Lewis losing out and Watford as well, not playing as well. So it's interesting. Reading did what they needed to do in terms of moving away from the drop zone. It's not looking good for Lewis and Watford. Too many good players. Too many good players there to be relegated from this league. And in my opinion, no team should be relegated from this league. The league needs to grow, but we'll move away from that for a moment. Durham, middling Durham. Durham, 7th place with 20 points. Blackburn Rovers with their Monday night football win, 22 points. Birmingham City, they've played with 15 games. You know, they've got two games, 26 points. You know, they need things to go their way if they want to do anything. Charlton, 30 points, played one game less than Sunderland, but on the same games played as Crystal Palace. Wow. Southampton played 17 on 30 points as well. Crystal Palace in second place for the moment. And I'll say it just as it is with 33 points and just 1 point ahead of them, top of the table. Oh, aye, the lasses played 17 games, 34 points. Sunderland, the team. Now, you know what? In terms of the table, even though Sunderland are at the top, and you've got to say this, where they were last season. The two players that have been key for them, and I'm not someone who's watching the team week in, week out. I'm not a Sunderland fan, but I bet their bottom dollar, the fans will never have guessed the impact that Fenton was going to have on that team. Phenomenal. This player is what you need, someone like this in the midfield who does all of the horrible stuff, and you just think, my God, this person is they intercept, they tackle, they help with the play going forward, they're involved. You know, two players that you see in their team that you just think, wow, fantastic. How did they get there and make that transition so easily? Absolutely fantastic for them. The other player, Katie Kitchen, who was formerly at London City Lionesses, Fenton, who was formerly at Blackburn. So, you know, you've got players that are going, and they've lost some good players there as well, moved on, but players that have gone in have actually made it a phenomenal season for Sunderland, a phenomenal season for them and their fans. They must be super, super happy. In terms of fixtures going forward, what does it mean for the next round of games? You know, in terms of the league, well, you know, Sheffield United are going to play Crystal Palace again. Durham have got Charlton, tough game for Charlton. They need that win. They're going to try and stay close to the top two. Lewis Watford, I mean, gosh, I mean, those two teams, of all the fixtures that they don't want, it's this one. Both teams in real trouble. Both teams need a win. If they draw that game, it hurts them both. So they need to get their shooting boots on and find their way to goal. Southampton, Reading. Southampton will probably be looking around thinking, what can they do to stay involved? London City Lionesses play host to Sunderland. Wow. I mean, there you go. A team in desperate trouble. And London City Lionesses will probably think they're not in desperate trouble. They are in desperate trouble. And Sunderland, top of the table. Katie Kitchen going to return back to her old club. Might do the damage. Who knows? And Birmingham City are going to play host to Blackburn Rovers in the next round of games. It's going to be interesting. Who knows where it's going to go in terms of teams that will be promoted. But, you know, whoever gets out of this league and goes up, you know, I wish them all the best. It'll be entertaining, definitely. And I would say this, when you do go up, don't be gone long. Come back. That is just wrong. Shouldn't have said that. We're going to go and talk a little bit about the WSL teams and their FA Cup games just after this.
There is no background music for this.
Drinking on. Oh, no, don't drink. It's only tea. Well, no, it's not actually tea. It's actually hot water, honey, and lemon. Don't ask. There are germs out there. Okay, the Women's FA Cup games that took place this weekend, in this weekend of March, second weekend of March. Etc. or first weekend of March, depending. I've got to check the calendar. Is it the first or second weekend? Yeah, it's this second weekend. Anyway, Leicester City jubilant and victorious in their quarterfinal game over Liverpool. Liverpool probably going, what? So what happened there? Brighton at home played host to Manchester United. Manchester United went 1-2-3-4. Thank you very much. Goodbye. We're going home. Brighton with nil. Everton at home against Chelsea. Chelsea take the points with one. God, what's it? Take the points. They go through to the next round with a 1-0 win. And Tottenham won. Manchester City won at full time, but Tottenham win on penalties against Manchester City. I don't understand. But Tottenham win on penalties. I don't understand that scoreline. I'm just going to say it again. I don't understand, but they did win on penalties. So there's that. Emma, what's happening? What's going on, Emma? Emma's a friend. She's a Man City fan, but I'm going to ask what's happening. Moving away. So the WSL teams were playing the FA Cup. The usual suspects, bar one, will not be there. No Man City, Chelsea there, Tottenham there, no Liverpool, Leicester, Manchester United. And there's a few, you know, we'll see what happens. So in terms of the semi-finals, Tottenham, Leicester, Manchester United, Chelsea. You know what? Someone will probably say it's a fix, right? Because Manchester United playing Chelsea in the semi-finals. But what you didn't want was a final where it was Chelsea Manchester United. You need another team, and you need to actually. So it's not a fix. I'm glad that the two big teams are going to actually duke it out in the semi-final. And I say big team. Manchester United consider themselves to be a big team, but Tottenham are in the other semi-final, and they consider themselves to be a big team. We're going to move away from that, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what I consider to be one of the best games I've seen in the Premier League for a long time, just after this. Okay, so in terms of the Premier League, the best game for me that stood out this weekend, and I know I could go over the scores, but I just felt the Liverpool Manchester City game, considering the number of players that Liverpool have had injured of late, and obviously Manchester City have had players injured as well over this season, but the level of expectation prior to this game was huge. You know, there was some war of words. There were things said by some players about, you know, things that had been won and whether they're worth the valuation of them or how they were held in the hearts of the fans and the players as opposed to the other team and what that would mean for them, etc. So, so what? You know, things happen, things are said. But in terms of what we saw on the pitch, it was an absolutely fantastic game. Some will probably say, oh, it's not the best game, but it is. I think sometimes when you have two teams and when you listen to the commentary, 9 times out of 10, whenever you hear commentators talk about Manchester City, they believe the game's already won. And it's Manchester, 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 especially Manchester City, not Manchester United. I need to clarify. So a Liverpool game versus Manchester City, Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, two of the best managers in the Premier League for some time, well above their peers. People can acknowledge that. I will say that this has been this was a very good game. It was an excellent game, and considering the chances that Liverpool didn't take, they're probably thinking, we could have won that game, but we're happy with a point. Manchester City may say, we're happy with a point, but we really should have won. So, there's that. But what I really like about this game, it was the way that Jurgen Klopp went up to Pep at the end, and he acknowledged the fact that probably that this is the last time they're going to duke it out in this sense within the Premier League as a manager, unless they meet somewhere along the line, playing ping pong or something like that, who knows, or snooker. And I've always thought that Klopp was a quality manager, and some will say he probably isn't, and some will say he says things to upset people, and he doesn't do this, and he doesn't that. You know, there's always going to be someone who doesn't like you or what that person does or how they come across. But I like Jurgen Klopp. I think he's probably not only one of the best managers, I believe he has been the best manager in the Premier League for a long time. Although Pep Guardiola and Manchester City have won the Premier League a number of times, and the way that Manchester City play fantastic football, and the players that Manchester City have, De Bruyne, Foden, etc. When they had Gundogan, they had some fantastic players. You just looked at for wow, fantastic, fantastic. But L Liverpool have had to operate with players that not everyone was familiar with, players who not every team would have fancied using. And Jurgen Klopp was able to bring players in that no one thought that were good enough and turn them around and say, yes, you can be part of this team. And they've raised their game. And for me, that's the manager who has shown his worth in terms of not just being a man manager, but being able to work with the players that they have and get those players to buy into what the club means and the way that the club should play football. And that is something really, really special. And you don't see it all the time. You don't see it all the time. And there are two players that I've always thought, how did he get them to play in a Champions League final so many times in a row? James Milner towards the end of his career, Jordan Henderson. And I'm not thinking, seriously, those two players, Arsenal fans wouldn't have wanted those two players in their team. Man United fans wouldn't have wanted those two players in their team. Chelsea fans wouldn't have wanted those two players in their team. Manchester City fans wouldn't have wanted those two players in their team. But Jurgen Klopp had those two players and he took them to the biggest party in Europe and said, I'm going to give you some silverware along with others in the team. So it tells me a lot about him as a manager. But I think that Liverpool have done really, really well to have him as a manager. But in terms of the fixture, it will be very interesting to see what kind of game Liverpool and Manchester City play next year when there is no Jurgen Klopp. It will be very interesting. Obviously, the pundits will still talk about Manchester City if Pep is still there. But for Liverpool, will they still have that kind of like, we're going to punch above, not punch above our weight? That's wrong. Are we still going to bring it when people think that we're not really a force, but we're still going to bring it in a way that we're going to show you that we haven't got the silverware as you have in this new age but we can still do damage on a pitch. It was a fantastic game to watch. Absolutely fantastic. But when Jurgen Klopp walks away from the Premier League, and in fact, when Jurgen Klopp and Pep walk away, the Premier League and those that commentate on it, they're going to struggle because, those caliber of managers, if they're not in the Premier League, the Premier League is going to struggle in terms of their branding and what they're going to say. And they're going to do everything they possibly can to get managers of that type over to manage teams. And maybe that era, like most things, just comes to an end. It's a shelf life and it'll be time to move on. Anyway, that's it for this week. I'm Rodney Cyrus. This is On and Off the Pitch. And until the next one, laters.